Good evening, gentlemen. I thought this evening we're going to start a brand new series, which will basically take us right into Hanukkah. The series tonight is basically on the aftermath of what we've been speaking about for the last 3 weeks. If you remember, 3 weeks ago we began a series on who is a Jew, and ultimately how can you become a Jew and be obligated in 613 commandments rather than just seven that the non-Jews are obligated in. We explained the three versions. Version number one, you're born to a Jewish mother. Version number two, you convert. And version number three, AID or AIH, artificial insemination, and all the ramifications of AID that we thought of in this forum. Now we're going to go on to the very next step. So you're a Jew. It's no secret, however, that if you're a Jew, there are different obligations upon you based on what? Once you reach the age of maturity, which we'll define in a moment, there's different obligations based on what? Not based on taste, not based on looks, based on sex, based on gender, if you're a male or a female. First and foremost, when is a woman obligated in the 613? At what age? 12. And a boy? 13. So that's difference number one. But even when they're obligated, let's say they're both 14 years old, they're both obligated on the equal level, there's no secret that within Judaism, there are different obligations upon men than on women. If I want to be totally precise, I would say that all in all, men have more obligations than women in Jewish law, except for maybe a few commandments that were given specifically to women, and men are not obligated in those commandments. To be more precise, there's one commandment only. But above all, men are obligated in more commandments than women in Judaism. What we're going to do during the next few weeks is to understand, first and foremost, what are those commandments, factually. And secondly, to try to understand the more dominant question, why? And I have to admit that here, I have never seen such a large literature of misconceptions all brought in together because of this specific distinction. Somehow this distinction, in some way or another, brought about endless, endless articles, books on what is the stand of a woman versus a man, and I have to say that many of them, if not most of them, are based on misconceptions and sometimes misinformation. And there's no question that an outsider's look would come in and say, if men are obligated in more commandments than women, then very naturally, men are on a higher level than women. Absolutely false. However, can you blame the outsider? I don't know if you can blame the outsider. The only thing I'm going to blame the outsider with, if I may, is the fact that an outsider doesn't become an insider. If you're going to write a book on this issue, you better know your facts well. If you want to deduce from your facts certain fundamentals about the difference between men and women, you better know your facts well. An outsider's look is not enough to write a book. As much as I may, an outsider, know about biology, I don't call myself a doctor. As many as Muslim, I'm an outsider, I know about painting, I don't call myself a painter, a professional painter. I can draw a picture of a little boy with the two hands coming out of him like a hangman. I don't call myself an artist because of that. Ultimately, not only have these misconceptions come about, there's no question that in the modern world sometimes it's very difficult for us to understand how can it be that in the modern world, whether you're a man or a female, you obviously have equal rights and equal obligations. When it comes to Judaism, we find a certain distinction. What we're going to do during the next few weeks is try to understand this distinction more profoundly. What we're going to do tonight is just explain one of those distinctions. With regard to negative commandments, the don'ts of Judaism, there is no difference between male and females. The only difference would be a Kohen. As you know, a Kohen can't do what? What can a Kohen do? Excuse me? Marry a divorcee. What else?
Visit a cemetery.
A daughter of a Kohen, a son of a Kohen has all those obligations. A daughter of a Kohen does not. Okay? That's the only negative commandments in the Torah that are different between men and women if you happen to be a daughter of a Kohen. Beyond that, just like you can't eat pig, a girl can't eat pig. Just like you can't be an adulteress, so too a girl can't be an adulteress. Just like you can't do idol worship, so too a girl can't do idol worship. With regard to the negative commandments, there's no difference. The difference comes about with regard to which kind of commandments, which category? What's the opposite of negative? Positive. Great guess. The do's, the what you must do and engage in, what you have to instigate, not just sit back and not do. Ultimately, with regard to those commandments, there is a specific distinction. One of the distinctions is the distinction between what we call time-bounded commandments and non-time-bounded commandments. If you have a commandment that's endless, or you can do it any time, obviously men and women are obligated equally. However, if there's a time-bounded commandment, meaning there's time restraints on when you can do it. For example, when do we wear tefillin?
Morning.
Every day? No, we can wear it throughout the day until night, till sunset. So since there's time restraints, women are exempt. When do we shake the law?
Hello.
What?
Hello.
Hello. What day of the year? You're going too specific. You may tell me what time. What day? Shake law this morning, Ben. Why not? Not circus, Ben says. When do you shake law on circus? There's a certain time, and only that time will you shake law. And any mikvah that has a time restraint in general, I'm not saying all in all, but in general, women are exempt. Shelley, yes, we'll end with your question.
Circumcision.
Circumcision is one of those commandments that women are not only exempt from, it's impossible for them to, of course, fulfill. There's no question. And there's no question that that in itself will signify for us a little bit better what indeed are the differences fundamentally between men and women in Judaism. And circumcision is definitely a commandment that women are not only exempt from, but just can't do. For example, the mitzvah of tefillin. When are we obligated to wear tefillin every day?
Morning.
Not morning. That's an incorrect answer, though I can understand it. Because generally our custom is to wear it in the morning. But the mitzvah of tefillin is every single day except for Shabbos and Yom Tov. All day. But, when I say all day, what do you hear, Moshe?
Maybe it's hard to work with it on.
No. When I say you can wear it every day, all day, but not
all night.
As soon as sunset hits, you must remove your tefillin. And because it's time-bounded, it's restricted by time, it's one of the many commandments that women are exempt from. However, I cannot say very easily here today, listen guys, any time-bounded commandments, women are exempt. Why can't I say that?
You asked me the last one, that's
Jack. Because it's wrong. It's incorrect.
Because there's some that they have.
There's some that they're obligated. Give me an example. Excuse me? Lighting the Shabbos candles can only be done at a specific time. You're correct. What else? What about Kiddush Friday night? Women are obligated in Kiddush. The Talmud says that if you get if you're screwed by the don'ts, then you got to do the do's on Shabbos. So since women are obligated in all the negative commandments of Shabbos, they're obligated in the positive commandments as well, making Kiddush, and obviously you can elaborate to lighting candles. What else?
Preparing for Shabbos.
Preparing for Shabbos, definitely. Definitely. No, but once again, when you say preparing, once again, when you say preparing for Shabbos, it's all the laws of Shabbos. So they're obligated in Shabbos just like men. Let's go to another category. What do you mean going to the mikvah? Yes, that's a specific commandment only for women and not for men. I'm talking about commandments that men do that women aren't. Huh? Men are not obligated to go to the mikvah ever. Except for if it's functional, they have to go into the temple. We have no temple today, you can say very easily, only women are obligated to go to the mikvah, not men.
Right.
What else? Nope. Unless you visited there recently.
Go
you want
for a multiply.
Ooh, they might be exempt from that. But let's go to a different example. They're only, with regard to the mitzvah of being fruitful and multiply, according to all authorities, every male is obligated. Women, some say they're not obligated, but it's like a catch-22, so they help the man fulfill his commandment. But others feel they are commanded, so that's more of the controversy. Let's go to another category, simpler. Time-bounded commandment, women are obligated.
Fasting and Yom Kippur.
Fasting is a negative commandment.
Oh, more positive.
All negative commandments women are obligated like men, except for the mitzvot on the Kohen, which are negative. If you're a son of a daughter, if you're a daughter of a Kohen, you're not obligated, so you can go to the cemetery. New guys, let's go to Vavus. Yeah. Let's go. Gentlemen and gentlemen, let's go to Pesach. Are women obligated to eat matzah on the night of the Seder?
Positive
mitzvah. Eating the mitzvah.
Eating
matzah is positive. You don't
so
eat it.
I thought you were
taking the female. No. Mitzvot that men are obligated in, women, according to my theory that they're time-bounded, shouldn't be obligated, but they are anyway. No? What What about eating matzah? Eating matzah, they're obligated. Again, the Talmud says, since the women are obligated in not eating chametz, they're obligated in eating matzah positively. Shaking the lulav, they're exempt, time-bounded.
What does time-bounded mean?
You're restricted by time. You can't do it whenever you want. You can put up a mezuzah anytime you want. Any time of the day. Night, day.
Put up a mezuzah.
They're obligated.
Okay, but we're going back to Philip. You're saying they have all day.
Yeah, but they don't have night. As long as you have restricted the mitzvah with regard to time, women are exempt, except for certain ones that we're speaking of now. Okay, so as you can all see, the time-bounded commandment rubric is not really a law or a rule. It's rather a common denominator. There's a list of mitzvah that God said women are exempt from. And the common denominator over most of them is the fact that it's restricted by time. But it's not a rule. It's not a governing rule. Rather, it's more of a common denominator. So as we said, very easily, women are obligated in Kiddush and eating matzah. And on the other hand, they don't shake lulav and they don't have to blow the shofar unless they want it. Now, those are the facts as we know them. If those are the facts as we know them, the question we have is a simple one. And what's the question? It's so simple, you would know it. Jack, what's the simple question emanating from our discussion?
Showing up to minyan on time.
No.
Oh, okay.
Anybody know what the question is? Gentlemen, I'm disappointed. How can you go out and say all are equal before God?
Women are better.
And women and men have these different obligations. How can that be? We're the same religion. We come from the same Jewish mother, as we explained. Or we convert, or artificial insemination, whatever it might be. Gentlemen, how are women not obligated just like men? Taking out one little mitzvah, I'll call it circumcision. Well, even if they wanted to volunteer, can happen. Why are they obligated like men? And therefore, why has there been such a good money-making machine called literature that comes out for every little person who wants to guess the reason, and thus prove either that Judaism is chauvinistic or otherwise? Why? Why did God in His infinite wisdom eternally decide men and women do not have the equal obligations before God? To answer this question, to answer this question, you need a little word of background. First of all, the answer is, I don't know. And I knock on the table and I say, I accept. I wasn't there in the editorial board of the Torah when God decided to put this in. He didn't exactly invite me and explain and say, this is my opinion, what do you think? And I would have heard his reasoning, I would have given my reasoning, I would have said, listen, you should give him the same applications because all the feminists will jump all over you. He didn't ask my opinion.
I thought when you went for your interview here that you told us you were there.
Where?
And I thought a few Saturdays.
Do me a favor, I'd rather not be there.
And I thought a few Saturdays ago, trying to win points, you stood up there and said, because of all the mistakes of men, that when God created women from man, that He made them much more perfect.
And that's the answer I wanted to suggest, though I then caution, I don't know the reason. The only thing I can do is take all the facts and try to suggest something. And these are the reasons, this is the reason I suggest. Many have suggested, I don't accept any other reason as really fitting into Jewish law, except for the following reason that, in my opinion, fits in beautifully like a very neat puzzle. The reason is as follows. As I said in Shabbos morning in Shul, a few weeks ago, in my opinion, when God created the woman, she was created more perfected than men. Why? Because she was created second. What do I mean second, Jack? You learn from your mistakes. You build two shelves. The first shelf, you're going to curse, you're going to shove, you're going to make holes where you shouldn't make holes. The second one, since you have experience, you'll make it more perfect. That's the way it is. The first time you build your sukkah, you're going to make mistakes. The second time is going to go up smoother, yeah.
Maybe it's just the opposite. Maybe He made man perfect. He made the woman imperfect because there's man there to make sure that she stays on track.
There is a suggestion like that. Shelley suggests that man was perfect, and God intentionally made woman imperfect so man can perfect her. I have one problem with that theory. The theory is as follows. According to what you're saying, it's man's job to perfect a woman.
And Keep her in line.
And it's the fact is that God intentionally, after making something perfect, made the same human being imperfect.
So that man has a role in life
Yeah, but where do you prove that man's role in life is to perfect the woman? Like, have you ever seen that notion?
It works for my marriage.
In your marriage, I hope it works the other way. Shelly, as your dear wife, is not here right now.
Of course.
It's not exactly fair.
Speaking for himself.
I'm testing the theory.
The theory is an interesting one, but all I can say is that in my opinion, I don't think that God would intentionally make something imperfect. He made man, and then he saw the mistakes. He saw what he did wrong, and therefore he made woman perfect. When he made man, he didn't have anything to compare it. All he had is angels and nature. Therefore, in my opinion, women are on a higher spiritual level naturally than men. If my assumption is correct, we can explain this distinction, this discrepancy between men and women as follows. Men need more mitzvot in order to gain the high spiritual level that women already have. In other words, God puts down a par. The par is thy high. So, in order for women to reach it, they just have to step up a little bit. In order for men to reach it, they got to step up a little more. So God helps us. He gives us more mitzvot in order to gain that level. So men and women have to gain the same level. It's easier for women than men, and therefore there's less mitzvot upon the woman than upon the man. In other words, if I can sum it up before I take your questions, men were created less perfect than women, and therefore they need more mitzvot to perfect themselves than women. Yeah.
Well,
that's already a suggestion that I didn't say, but okay.
But if we understand that, and men tend to be, you know, the hunters and tasks-oriented, then that gives us an insight into God's understanding.
What spiritual perfection is.
Interesting.
Well, I'm assuming that women also have a heart and a mind, emotional heart.
No, it's not one of the other.
But the question is a very interesting one, and that is, if physically we can say that women and men, because of their physical makeup, they're different from one another. And I happen to agree. Well, that's what I'm going to suggest.
In most
cases. A male has a very sad life. Because ultimately a male is brought into this world and develops for many years, just like a woman. Then a male reaches a certain age, let's say 18, 19, where he's not going to have to shave anymore. That's the hairs that God gave him. And that's his body. And that's the body he has. He's not going to develop anymore. It's not going to change anymore. The only thing that's going to happen is his hair's going to turn gray, and he's going to start losing hair and going downhill until he reaches the grave. So he starts stepping down until he reaches the grave. That's the way the male's body is created. A woman's body, quite the contrary. She reaches the age of puberty, let's say. Her body is changing every single, finish the sentence, month. Every month. A woman goes through a very normal period every single month. That means internally in her body, if you take the beginning of the month and the end of the month, there's something different. The body is constantly changing due to that normal menstrual period. And because of that change, because of it, she's much more sensitive to the fact that she should always be changing, getting better than she was, trying to go more. Now, does it always happen? Of course not. Women can also feel very comfortable the way they are. But their very physical makeup is different than men. Yes. Yeah.
Their brains are different.
Okay. The brains already, I'm not an expert. I can't comment on a woman's brain. I will very cautiously agree that their brains are superior, but I do not know that much about the brain, so I wouldn't know. But that physical makeup of the woman, the fact that she's constantly changing, means she can aspire to more. You don't have to be comfortable. A man, being who he is and being the way he is, you can't change anymore. That's the way you are. When you know, you start going downhill. You don't go uphill. I'm going to pick up exactly where Jack left off, and that is the point as follows. Why is it at school, men or boys always play contests? Who can get there first? Who can be stronger? And women very naturally play jump rope, meaning a game together. No one won, jump rope, jumping together. How come in psychology to this day, I'm not that old, I went to college not too many years ago, I took a course in psychology, they taught this example as the difference between men and women.
What does that tell us if we believe that God created female to be more perfect?
What is God?
Which are different.
So maybe perfection means not to win, but rather to play together. Could very well be. Now let's go through the mitzvot and try to see if our theory stands. Let's go through them and see if what I just said is bupkis on top of bologna, or maybe kosher meat on top of steak. Let's begin. Gentlemen, on the first day of the year called Rosh Hashanah, every Jew is commanded on a very interesting commandment, and that is what? Don't say dip the apple in honey. On Rosh Hashanah, what is the commandment of the day, the mitzvah of the day? Not to eat. Not necessarily to daven. Oh, come on, guys. Celebrate the new year. But what is the mitzvah of the day, the positive commandment that we fulfill on that day?
Prepare yourself between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
No, on Rosh Hashanah itself. What is the mitzvah of the day? Not just between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. No, maybe not even a mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah to be happy. Might be a mitzvah to be happy on Rosh Hashanah as well. But there's a specific mitzvah we only do on Rosh Hashanah. We don't do any other day of the year.
Shofar.
Shofar, says Yaakov. Correct. That's the mitzvah of the day. That's the biblical mitzvah. It's a very important mitzvah. We spend endless hours here in this forum trying to understand this mitzvah. Does it surprise you, therefore, Lawrence, to know that women are exempt from this mitzvah? They're exempt. They don't have to do it. Interesting. Let's go to another holiday, my favorite holiday, Sukkot. What's the mitzvah of the day on the first day of Sukkot? The lulav and etrog, says Shelley correctly. You have to shake the four species. Does it surprise you that mitzvah, which costs a certain amount of money just to fulfill, women are exempt from? They rather have to go all the way to Toronto on an emergency trip to make sure we get it, and women are exempt? Very interesting. Why? They're also exempt from the mitzvah of Sukkot. You know, I was freezing in the sukkah this year. You were freezing. If you could stand this, Tzar, you got to sit in there. Your wife could say, with all due respect, Tzar, I love you very much. I don't have to sit in the sukkah with you. Freeze alone? Beautiful. Why? You take my theory, I would explain like this. There's certain times of the year that we're supposed to be in a certain mood. Rosh Hashanah, solemn. Sukkah is happy. We have to get to that spiritual level of being happy, which I explained as being content. And on Rosh Hashanah, to be in a solid mood, to know you're standing before judgment of the King of all kings. He knows everything you did this year, Victor, and you better know good explanations as to why. Well, for taking a man at his level and putting him up to that particular level is difficult. So God gave you a visual aid, a mechanism to make it easier, something physical, something tangible. What's it called? The shofar. Sukkot, you're supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be content. You're supposed to say, thank God I'm part of a Jewish nation that God's looking out of. How do I know God's looking out for us? I'm sitting outside in the freezing cold. Any minute the sukkah can blow away, and God's guarding the Jewish nation. How do I know God's guarding the Jewish nation? Pogroms, anti-Semitism, Holocaust, deportations, and we're still here to talk about in the year 2005. Great. You're supposed to feel happy and content. How are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? That day you lost the money in the stock market. Business is not going well. The kids are screaming. The wife is nagging. How are you going to do it? Visual aid. The rule of an etrog. Accordingly, women can get to that same level without the rule of an etrog, without the shofar. They're able to get to the same high, elevated, spiritual level of being happy on Sukkot, being solemn on Rosh Hashanah without the visual aids. However, if they want it, no problem. They can fulfill the mitzvah of shofar, and they can fulfill the mitzvah of lulav and etrog. But they don't necessarily need it. Naturally, they're on a much higher level than men, and therefore, to get to those specific times of the year, they don't need it. And I'll just add one cherry on top. If you think about what we said last night, we explained that the woman's body every single month is changing. A man's body stays the same for endless years. Ultimately, to understand that certain seasons are different from others. This day is happy. This day is solemn. This day is sad. This day is wonderful and joyful. It's very hard for us. We're in the same state every day. Our body doesn't develop. Our body develops to a certain age. It stays that way for tens of years. And then it starts degrading down, 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 down until we hit the rock bottom. I won't elaborate what that means. Gentlemen, a woman's body constantly is changing, at least for the formative years of her life. The tens of years that we don't change, a woman's body is changing every single month. And ultimately, that change makes her sensitive to time, and sensitive to the fact that there's different times that connote different things. Sukkot is a very joyous holiday. Today, this time of the year, the end of the month of Cheshvan, there's nothing overly joyous about this day. Nothing. Oh, the weather was a little nicer than usual in November. Doesn't make me extremely happy. To be sensitive to time and thus to be happier or sadder, it's much easier for a woman due to her physical buildup than a man. So God gave us visual aids. What can we do? We're a little bit of a degraded. God has to give us those visual aids. Women who much more naturally physically understand the differences between different times can actually get to that same level without the help of the visual aids. Jewish law trusts women more than it trusts men. And therefore doesn't feel a problem for women to look at men, and men looking at women might be a no-no under certain circumstances. In terms of the laws of modesty, and in terms of the laws of being sexually inclined to certain things, Jewish law doesn't trust men too much. It trusts women a whole lot more. If you understand my theory, you understand why also. Let's speak about tonight another mitzvah, which is not a holiday-based mitzvah, but actually accompanies us in the synagogue throughout every week of the year. And that's reading the Torah. It's a well-known fact that one of the mitzvot that women are exempted from is the mitzvah of reading the Torah or hearing the Torah reading. Very interestingly, this particular mitzvah is, of course, one of the time-bounded commandments. You don't read the Torah any time you want. When do we read the Torah? What are the examples? Yes?
Monday and Thursday.
That's right. Monday and Thursday, as well as
Shabbat
and the holidays of the year. So, and of course, mourning days of the year and fast days of the year. So ultimately, we're talking about only specific times. So it's time-bounded. It's restricted with regard to the time that you can fulfill the commandment. We can't just read the Torah today. It's Wednesday, and therefore, it's a time-bounded commandment. It's one of the many time-bounded commandments that women are exempt from. Now, why would women be exempt from it? It's such a beautiful commandment. You read part of the Torah, the law, the lifestyle of the Jews. Why would they be exempted from it? In order to explain that, we have to give a very short one-minute overview as to why we read the Torah at all. Because let's face it, between you and me, okay? Between you and me and the tape and anyone that's hearing the tape subsequently from tonight, reading the Torah is the most ineffective way to educate anyone about what the Torah says. Why do I say that? Let's think about it. You take out a scroll. What's the scroll have in it? It has parchment and Hebrew words. Tell me something. Are there vowels there? No. Is there an English translation or any other translation?
No.
None. Ultimately, if you want to teach someone, someone says, I want to learn Torah, would you tell them, come to shul on Monday and Thursday and Saturday, you'll learn a lot? Or would you tell them, come to a lecture? What do you say? Come to a class. Come to a lecture. Hear something over the internet. You're not going to learn anything from hearing the Chinese. Ching chang chung and ching chang ching. You're not going to understand the word. And that's the way it is, I would say, for 95% of any listener to the Torah reading that day. And many readers that know how to read the Torah beautifully don't understand what it says. So ultimately, that's not learning Torah. So I go back now to what we explained, I think it was last year when we did a series on Torah reading, and we explained then that reading the Torah is not necessarily learning Torah. That's not the way to teach. Rather, what is it? It's reenacting, recreating Mount Sinai in a small, minimized fashion, Monday, Thursday, Saturday, holidays, as well as fast days. What do I mean? What was that Mount Sinai? Who was the speaker? Who was the speaker? God, the holy God, blessed be He. That's, of course, subsequently, kibiyachol, the reader of the Torah is standing in place of God. Who received the Torah from God? The Jewish people. Who is their representative?
Moses.
So the person that gets the aliyah is subsequently like the receiver. You have two gavoyim, or two people standing on either side of the bima. Who are they going to represent? You have to remember, all the Jewish people sit around the bima, right? Sit around the bima, very nice. Sit around Mount Sinai. Okay. Aaron, the Grand Kohen, Levian, those are the people that were on the sidelines, so to speak. So that's what we're recreating every time we read the Torah. So what we're doing is recreating Sinai. We're saying that, in essence, the Jews can't be good Jews just because you teach them and you fill their heads with a lot of intelligent comments about Judaism. Rather, you need the experience of Judaism. You need to feel Judaism. It's not enough to speak about it. You need to feel it. You need to act it. And ultimately, you need good experiences. We don't come to Shul on Rosh Hashanah necessarily because you need to go to Shul on Rosh Hashanah, and that's the law. Rosh Hashanah, in terms of Jewish law, is like any other day. You're supposed to daven Shachris and Musaf and Mincha. And ultimately, on Rosh Chodesh, this Friday, you're supposed to daven Shachris and Musaf and Mincha. And Meyer the night before. Why do we come to Shul? Why are there hordes of Jews coming to Shul on Rosh Hashanah? The experience, the white kittles, the davening, the shofar blowing, which is a positive commandment, all these things build up a Jewish experience. You don't make kreplach on the eve of Yom Kippur because there's a law to make kreplach on the eve of Yom Kippur. It's part of the taste of your house. It's part of the taste of where you grew up. It's the experience of Judaism. So every time we read the Torah, we're recreating that experience of Judaism, and hopefully Jews will be steadfast in what we read out of the Torah, ultimately the actual themes of the Torah and the mitzvot of the Torah. How they will be steadfast? They went through an amazing experience. Minimized, of course. Monday, Thursday, Shabbos. Once a year, we uplift that. Shavuos, Simchas Torah, we uplift that experience. There's no question. So ultimately, that's the reason for reading the Torah. And if that's the reason for reading the Torah, we can expand it very nicely. That spiritual level, that excitement, is not necessarily something that comes too easy to a man. It might come easier to a woman for the reasons we explained last night. Yes, Rabbi Rosen had a question. He raised a hand. In my opinion, the Takana of Ezra, which said we should read the Torah on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, was not to teach the people Torah. If that would be the case, in my opinion, at the time of Ezra, the prevalent language amongst the Jews was which language? Anybody know?
Aramaic.
So they would probably say, on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, you should read Aramaic. There was there once an enactment that when you read the Torah, you should read the translation into Aramaic. The Yemenite Jews do that to this day. They read the Torah, they read the Aramaic. Unkos, only Unkos. Arab Yom HaMenuzia. But ultimately, in my opinion, that was the reason for it. You should reenact in the excitement of Judaism Monday, Thursday, Saturday, so hopefully in between those days, the Jews are practicing Judaism fully. Yes, David.
When you said, it reminded my father when I was still in Czechoslovakia. And how we studied Torah, we were translating from Hebrew to Yiddish.
Yes. Which is learned in the Hebrew school, Marty. Yeah.
Now, I didn't know Hebrew, and I didn't know Yiddish, and it was like learning Japanese by translating to Chinese.
But how come you still remember the song today?
Well, I have the memory.
I think it was an experience, and you like to reenact it. Exactly. You didn't learn anything from that experience. The Cheder Rebbe stood there in Cheder, David says, and started doing, everyone has to translate from the Hebrew to the Yiddish. They didn't understand Hebrew, and according to what David's saying, you didn't even understand Yiddish. So ultimately, you weren't helping. It's not like when I translate, I go, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Emor, and God spoke to Moses, and this is what Moses said, after God told him. What did Moses say? And you go on to explain. They were going word for word. It wasn't because they were teaching, it was part of the experience of Judaism. They were reenacting the way their forefathers learned. And how they learned. And ultimately, that's what we're doing with the Torah reading. We're taking out something that's not a very good tool to teach. We're taking out something that's an excellent tool to reenact an experience that's needed, mainly for men. For women who understand the notion of change, monthly change, that's not something that might be necessarily needed as an enactment that they must do. And there's no question the fact that God made us come to minyan three times a day, beat traffic, make sure to daven within a shul, within a minyan, is because, with all due respect, we're a bunch of degenerates. Women, who are on a much higher level than everyone sitting here, do not have to do everything of the above. They can daven once a day, according to many authorities, that's good enough, and they can daven anywhere, and that will suffice for women. Now the question arises, if everything I said was true, and you can probably now understand why you have a mechitza in shul, we won't go into that right now, we'll wait till later. Gentlemen, let's say a woman comes and says, thank you very much, God, I didn't want to beat the traffic, I could stay at home, I don't have to come to shul, but I want to! On a Sunday, on a certain day of the week when there's no traffic, and the kids are in Hebrew school, and it's convenient, can I volunteer to do a mitzvah? I'm not obligated. Well, let's say a woman comes along and says, I love sukkahs. I love sukkahs too. I love sitting in the sukkah, great. Fine. Can I sit in the sukkah too? God said you don't have to. Can a woman volunteer to do something she doesn't have to do? What do you think?
Yes.
Everybody says yes unanimously?
Not
the answer, of course, is yes on most things. On certain things, not exactly. There's more of a controversy. And I will probably give you tonight a certain equation of how to try to remember it, and we'll go through the examples as time goes on. The equation is like this. The equation is, if it's a mitzvah that concerns only you, you could probably volunteer to do it. If the mitzvah you're going to do would be in the public realm, there will probably be a controversy about it. But we'll go through the examples. Yes?
Back to the women and men, and I know you've taken the approach that women are better or have less obligations because they were created better than men.
You said two things, Victor. I wanted to make a distinction. The first thing you said was, I've taken the approach that women are better than men. I would say women are on a higher spiritual level than men. The second thing was not my approach. The second thing was God's approach. God decided women are exempt from certain mitzvot. That's not my opinion. Victor, you're entitled to your opinion. I'll just say for the tape that I will not repeat that opinion, as I would like to walk the face of Halifax. And many other cities. Ultimately, I can't agree with you for a very simple reason. If that would be true, it wouldn't hold true throughout all the examples we said. If God expected less rather than more out of women because they're on a lower level, and what can you expect? Women are on a lower level. If that would be the case, then it would be very hard for me to understand many Jewish laws that seem to put women much higher than men. So it just wouldn't be consistent throughout the examples. But you're entitled to your opinion. Maybe you can explain certain examples, not the others. Okay. Yeah.
So, with that reason, if women are on the higher spiritual plane, shouldn't they have the capacity, say, to be better Torah scholars?
Could be. But interestingly, God exempted women from the mitzvah of learning Torah. And once again, let's say they volunteer. A woman doesn't have to learn Torah. A woman does not have to go out of their way to learn Torah. Let's say a woman loves scholarship. She loves her tradition. She wants to understand it better. Can she volunteer? Can she do what she, in essence, is not obligated? So as I said to you before, if it's a personal thing, usually it's okay. The exception to that rule would be learning Torah, but we'll explain that later. We'll explain it, and we'll explain it in detail. If it's a public realm mitzvah, give me an example of something public.
Making a minion.
Well, making a minion, she's not obligated, so she can't make a minion.
But that's public.
She's public, but she doesn't make a minion. I'm saying a mitzvah she can fulfill. What's a mitzvah? Excuse me?
Reading the Megillah
could be done personally. And she is obligated in the Megillah reading. We'll get to that later. Give me another example that's not necessarily done publicly. It has to be done publicly. Gentlemen, we discussed it last night. I'm standing right in front of it.
Reading the Torah.
You can only read the Torah with a minion. A woman wants to read the Torah. Nope. What are you going to do? Megillah you can read by yourself. It's better to read in the minion, but there's a controversy if you didn't have to. But Torah reading, you need a minion? Give you another example. It's a personal mitzvah, and yet we usually do it in public. Anyone tell me what it is? We do it every morning. Tefillin, Talis. In general, if a woman wants to daven at home, tefillin and Talis. I would say there's no controversy. The controversy is, we usually where do you want to get spiritual satisfaction? Where? In shul. So then you put it into the public realm, we have more of a controversy about it. And that is an issue in itself. But in general, that's the equation. So let's go through the equation easily. Private mitzvot, shaking the lulav, blowing shofar. Women want to volunteer? Great. They want to sit in the sukkah, sleep there, freeze there with me? Great. Wonderful. There's no problem with it. When it comes to Taurus and Tefillin, all of a sudden we found more controversial views for various reasons. But I say, in essence, it's okay if it's done privately. The minute it's done publicly, you might be breaking up this equation of the fact that people would come in from outside and they'd say, see, women and men, same spiritual level. That would be an insult to women to say that. Women and men both wear tefillin. Women and men both wear talis. They have equal obligations before God on all realms. That's not true. So therefore, I would say there, it's better if you're going to do it in private. There's no problem with it. I know many women that do that, and I personally have no problem with it. The minute you do it in public, you have to take the right restrictions. Yes, Shelley.
Why are we concerned about public perception?
You mentioned this Friday night in Shul, and the reason I gave was, in Judaism there is a very strong emphasis, not just on who you are, but rather how you portray yourself and how you're perceived. And that's the way I explained the Summit on Saturday night. That's why you have to smell it. It's important to smell good, not just to be good. And that's the way I also explained why there's so many laws regarding clothing. How are you supposed to dress on Shabbos? versus Yom Tov versus during the week. How do you dress for davening versus how do you go to work? It's also about how people perceive you. It's not just about that. Yes, someone else, 1 second. Yeah, Jack.
Public mitzvahs, that's assuming a co-ed form. What about if we have a chapel like this only with women who want to daven in the Yom Tov?
God willing, that's what we have next week for. Good question, and we'll get to it next week. What about women that want to do it together? Not in front of men, but rather privately. Yes, Shelley, follow up.
No, I'm following up to the point I raised about the women wearing a tall shirt to fill in their shawl.
Mm-hmm.
And you used the word public perception.
Yeah.
And I'm saying if everybody in the synagogue is Jewish, and everybody's having a problem, obviously they would understand why they're wearing it, and they have the right to wear it. So why is public perception a reason not for them to do it?
The reason I think is because I don't necessarily agree that everyone in synagogue would understand everything here, because not everyone in synagogue comes and learns every night with the rabbi about these laws. Many people that would come in would obviously have their own ideas by just looking, and first impressions do count, and therefore, definitely, it's important that the perception be the same. And maybe that's the reason, Shelley, that on Yom Tov, even though it's a happy day, I'm very happy on Shavuos, you're happy on Shavuos, the truth of the matter is we still have to show everyone we're happy by wearing nicer clothing than other days of the year. Even though we're all happy and we're all Jewish and we all come to the same show and we all eat at the same table. Quite frankly, on the holidays, the only people at your table will be Jews. But still, you have to portray it, you have to show it. And that's one of the ways we show it and we express it. And I'll just end with this. The reason for the mechitza in the synagogue, the partition between men and women, has nothing to do with how your mind's going to swander. Because everybody knows if a mechitza is thigh high, in some way or another, it suffices halachically and you can still see your wife and all the girls around her. So obviously it's not because you might have sexual thoughts during davening. The reason, in my opinion, the authentic reason for the mechitza is just to show one thing. Men and women are different. I'm not going to use the words Victor used, and that is that men are better or worse than women. I don't think that's true. Better is not the term, but they're different. Different obligations, different physiological build-up, different spirituality, different emotionally. That's why there's a mechitza in synagogue. It's an ideal place. And when you come into an ideal place, you have to not just say it, not just preach it, not just show it, you have to also show it. And the way we show it is obviously through that partition in the shul.